In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. So sorry it's been so long since the new episode, just been busy with the day job, but wanted to get in a couple more pieces of tape that I cut at WonderCon. Just a couple fly-on-the-wall moments where I was more observer than reporter or interviewer and allowed the stories to unfold in front of me. You're going to be hearing from Boom Studios' own Ross Ritchie and Fox Atomic Studios' Eric Lieb right after the Boom Studios panel at WonderCon, where they announced that the two companies are going to be working together on future books. What books? They're not saying. They're not saying until the summertime. So right after the panel, Matt Brady from Newsarama and myself talked to Eric and Ross Ritchie and also Chip Mosier, the marketing director of Boom, to try and get a little bit more information than just that blanket statement that was left at the panel. Let's listen in, shall we?
What brought this deal into fruition in the first place?
That's your thing.
At the studio, I mean, Fox Atomic is a relatively new addition to the Fox Filmed Entertainment family. We started in 2006 as a studio, and elevate my voice. And the studio was spun out of Fox Searchlight. Peter Rass, as I said, who runs Searchlight, is also our big boss. And we were formed not really as a demographic not as a genre studio, but more as a demographically targeted studio. So we make films for 17 to 24-year-olds. But in addition to films, we also want to take advantage and just have fun telling other stories, using other media. So we have an online division that's doing short-form content, virals. And then when I got to the studio, Peter Rice was a big comics fan as well, so wanted to start doing original graphic novels. So in 2006, I put a deal into place with our sister company, HarperCollins, to start doing original graphic novels based around our film titles, because films we had in development at that time was a sequel to 28 Days Later, the sequel to Hills Have Eyes. So I'm just a fan of like playing around in fun worlds. So those are fun worlds. So wanted to tell stories that were in the world that helped tie in to, create awareness about the sequels that were coming out, extend the world, etc. And so the first two titles tied into that, the 28 Days Later graphic novel and the Hills Have Eyes graphic novel. We also wanted to do original stories, but it's not, hey, we can do this and it'll be, a movie, just being kind of like, hey, let's just reverse engineer it. We're always led from doing cool comics. So even the titles that we started out with, Steve Niles wrote the first one, Jimmy Famiotti and Justin Gray.
Let me hop in and say, I think one of the things that's interesting about Fox Atomic is, like, they don't need to do new original content as a comic book to make a movie. They're a movie studio. So I think that's...
they're breaking down. We don't need Boom to make movies. I mean, we're doing it right now. But comics are a fun way to tell another story, because the storytelling conventions that you do in a movie are different from storytelling conventions in a comic. A comic gives you more decompressed structure. Movies, you have to be very, characters have to be tight and, go on arcs, et cetera, et cetera. But it was, first and foremost, a way to just do fun, cool comics. So that's why, from the writers to the artists that we had on our original titles, Ben Templesmith, Bill Sienkiewicz, Ted McKeever, just first and foremost, doing fun, cool comics. And based upon the success of those books, wanted to find a way to expand it and do more. And in Boom, I saw a sympathetic partner in the sense of creatively, we were sharing talent, be they writers, be they artists, just before we had even met, because I had been watching Boom as a company, because I've been reading their titles and just intrigued and interested in them. So when I was looking at ways to take what we were doing and expand it, I started thinking about Boom, and then I approached Ross at WonderCon last year, and we literally hammered it out at the Isotope that night, and spent the rest of the time putting the bits and pieces into place, now we're executing on it. And it's first and foremost just doing fun, cool comics, and because that's something I'm a huge fan of myself. I've grown up loving movies, comics, and video games, so to be able to create cool comics in the worlds that we have based upon our current titles, to do original stuff, it's just fun, cool. So very happy to be working with Boom.
So what can you say, how does the deal work? Are you bringing concepts, properties to Boom? Are you packaging things and then going through Boom for publishing? Or
it's a two-way street, really, because, I mean, on the creative side, we really work literally hand-in-hand because, and it also makes it very nice that Boom is literally down the street. So we can sit in the, I can go over there and jam out in the conference room, and we have multiple times. Ross and Andy come over to our offices a lot of times to meet with film talent, to meet with whomever. And so creatively, it's actually a really organic two-way street, even coming down to like artists on the books, or, you know, I'll find somebody every weekend, send it over, you know, via email. It's like, oh, that guy could work, this guy could work. So creatively, it's a two-way street. Publishing-wise, you know, Boom has, you know, that facilities and infrastructure, and they're really good at that. So that's, that the nuts and bolts component is, you know, that ball is in their court.
Are there existing licenses that Fox has already given out to other publishers that, when they expire, will fix, you know, find itself as part of this deal, or are these all, you know, new things?
I don't think. Basically, the announcements of what kind of content it will be is something that we have to stay away from commenting on now,
okay.
And then we'll be able to talk about it as it's revealed.
Okay. Are we going to see other genres? Can you tell me? And obviously, you've mentioned 28 Days Later, Hills of Eyes. You know, are there going to be any action adventure franchises that might? You know.
Much like the films that we do are cross genres. You know, we do action films, we do horror films, we do comedies.
Right.
It'll be the same the same thing on the comic side as well.
I think that that's a place where we crossed over with content, because I think Boom does horror and fantasy and science fiction. You know, you look at things like Cover Girl, and it was like an action story with a lot of comedy. So I think that was something that we had in common.
I guess not to be indelicate about it, but to get to the nuts and bolts of the deal, and Fox Atomic Comics has had, what, you've been out for 4 years, have had four releases. I mean, was this deal...
Not 4 years, just two.
2 years, sorry.
Like, the first book came out in 2007.
Yeah. I mean, was this deal something that was necessary for Fox Atomic Comics line to survive, or is it...
No, because, I mean, we are not a comics company.
Mm-hmm.
We are just before we did this deal, when you talk about Fox Atomic Comics, you're looking at it.
Okay.
And it's in it, and it's not like that was the comics role that I serve isn't my primary function. I'm on the theatrical development side, working on all of our film titles. But I also, you know, basically two hats: got my film hat, got my comics hat. So it's, you know, this division is just kind of like a side.
Mm-hmm.
It started as like a side project that was.
Just
based upon love and just the way to do it, and another way to, again, to tell stories within the comics medium. But, you know, it was definitely a case of the books that we put out was quality over quantity, because it's not a business that is our primary line of business. You know,
right.
We are first and foremost a film studio. So this is just, it was another way to tell stories and to have fun with our properties, create new properties, and what we're doing now is taking that to the next level and just doing a lot more with it, because, you know, the facilities,
I think it's
a great team at Boom, too.
It's safe to say the first go-round was a success, and then even won some awards. And so I think that you guys, and you guys were like, wow, this is really cool, this went really well, how do we do more of this? And through that process, how do we take it up to the next level?
A lot more eloquent than I.
the announcement, part of the announcement that you could say was that, I guess this is for more for you, Ross, that there are five titles. I mean, these are ongoing titles?
Five
projects coming.
Maybe it was laid out incorrectly. What it was there were two titles launching in July,
mm-hmm.
and those two titles have second issues, which carried over into August.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, so the graphic was, was unclear, and then we're adding one to that.
Jam your left elbow back really hard. There you go.
Other left.
So it'll be a total of three titles launching in July,
summer.
Between July and August.
Right.
Two in July, one in August.
Yes. Okay, that's correct.
Okay.
And then, you know, as we go through the convention season, we're going to unveil the black to reveal what the titles are.
Okay, gotcha.
And again, it's a mix of ongoing titles, you know, ongoing monthly titles, as well as limited series that we'll be doing as we move down the line.
Okay.
And then those will be collected into...
Cool. With the deal, will Boom then, how will these be distributed? Will you be going through Boom Channel, or will you be going through HarperCollins?
Well, we're publishing the individual singles comics through Boom, mm-hmm. and then when they're collected into the trade, then we'll, you know, go with a mass market, you know, mm-hmm. avenue.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And understand that in the direct market, it's all, I'm not speaking some weird syntax or some weird thing. It's like, it's all very straightforward. There's a mass market partner, and then there's a direct market.
Does this deal get Boom closer with Fox, in a, I guess, in a way of putting it? I'm looking for, I guess, an upside for Boom here, a broader upside that is easy to see. Obviously, you get content and titles.
I mean, come on!
I mean, he is a handsome
come
man.
Come on!
He is handsome. Does this get Boom titles in front of Fox easier, or is this precursor to a deal with Fox, a first look,
well,
something like that?
Well, I think it's not a precursor to having a first look deal with Fox. You know, as far as the Boom titles getting in front of Fox easier, I mean, like, for example, prior to the deal, obviously, Eric was aware of the Boom titles and was actually at the studio, and so he was going to stores and buying them and reading them. I had not sent them to him, mm-hmm. and so we have had, we sold Northwind to Fox. So Fox is very much aware of Boom's content and their stuff, and there are a number of executives across. Fox is a bit different than many other studios. There's different divisions. There's Fox Atomic. There's Fox Searchlight. There's what's called Big Fox in the business, which is like the Day the Earth Stood Still and the big tentpole movies.
Fox 2000.
Right.
Regency.
And so we've had interactions with the guys at Regency who love our stuff, and you know, we have a bunch of different divisions that are aware of our stuff. So it doesn't necessarily make the company more aware of that. It does create a practical day-to-day working relationship between us and Fox. Mm-hmm. And you know, to me, it's like, this is really exciting to me as a fan, because as somebody that, you know, started Boom, I'm like, wow, this is really cool. As a fan, this is the sort of thing that I wanted to see it done right. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to go in and you're going to do it and you're going to work with hand-in-hand with the studio to make comics, you know, just the fan in me is, there's huge potential there to do really, really cool titles and to have the right artists and the right, you know, creators on. It's not a, just another licensed comic kind of thing, which is usually how a comic book company works with a movie studio, which is they work the consumer products division. That is not what we're doing. We're working with guys like Peter Rice, who runs the division, who, you know, did Slumdog Millionaire and The Wrestler last year. I mean, huge, it's
like the comic.
I'm all for it.
We are all for it. But you know, there is that degree to which it's like, I think if you look at what we do, you know, like if you look at Warhammer and you say that, you know, there's a lot of different licenses to go out and acquire, and Warhammer is something that has a diehard fan base that people really love and are really passionate about, you can see that what we do is we go for opportunities where we can really throw our heart into it. I don't think if you look at the Boom stuff, you go, oh, well, these guys are making widgets. That's a good, smart business decision. There's a lot of money there. But I look at the book and I go, oh, they're, you know, did they get the right creators? Does it really fit the material? Well, they're just kind of putting out a piece of merchandise. Mm-hmm. I mean, my hope is that when you look at what Boom does, that it's not, you can't characterize it like that. And I think that was my reaction when, you know, he came to me here at WonderCon. We're like going out drinking on isotope, and it's like, you know, let's do this and let's do that and let's do this. I mean, imagine if Fox came to you, you'd be like, oh, this is awesome. Can we do this? Can we do that? Can we do this? Mm-hmm. And it's that year-long process of figuring out what are the dead ends and what can we not do and what can we do and how do we put it together in such a way that it's very exciting and gets people to go, this is cool. You know, like, I want to be a part of this.
Right. Because to build upon that, too, I mean, we're really one of the only studios that is publishing comic books. You know, I'm working on both films and mm-hmm. comics, and it's something that we built from the ground up in the studio. And you know, before we did this deal, you know, basically, like I said, Fox Atomic Comics was me, and then I'd worked with either, you know, Jimmy Palmiotti or, you know, Heidi McDonald, you know, to help just, you know, edit and put together the books. But it was really just, you know, doing it internally. And so since we were doing that and wanted to find a way to make it even bigger, it was basically just me saying, who could we work with? What's a way that we can make this and take it to the next level?
looking at the playing field, and then,
let me geek for a second and say, he looks like a comic book fan, but he's a film executive. Don't be fooled. And what's so cool about going over there and sitting down and going to the conference room with, like, the head of the studio is, you're sitting there and you're looking at different cover art, and you're looking at different layouts, and he's going, hey, you know what we need? We kind of need here something that's kind of like a Bill Sienkiewicz riff. Of like, you know, because he's read Electro Assassin and he knows what the reference is. You know, it's a phenomenally friendly room to be able to, you know, guys that have actually not only, like, most of the meetings that you have, you know, when you sit down with film people, it's like, well, you serialize a comic book and then you collect it into something called a graphic novel, which is sometimes called a trade paperback. And I know it's confusing, but a graphic, and when we say graphic novel, we mean trade paperback. And when we say trade, what we mean is graphic novel, you know. But these guys are like totally get it already in there. And it's that great sort of synthesis. And as crazy as it sounds, it's like it's this really sort of fun jam session where we're just tossing everything onto the table and figuring out how does it work for Fox and how does that make sense in the Boom direction as far as, you know, we're not doing some crazy format or you know, or maybe we are in that would be a great opportunity.
Right. Just to wrap it up and give people something to speculate about, because they will regardless. What's the breadth of, I guess, properties that we're looking at that could make their way into this deal? Not necessarily, you know, point is where, what is, but, I mean, we're not talking just the Fox Atomic stuff with the Fox Atomic label, or are we talking a broader Fox property?
Yeah, decades of franchises, I mean, you know.
Well, this is, you know, it is Fox Atomic Comics, so, you know, again, if you look at the movies that we have coming out this year, to help answer that question, we have a mix of titles. We have a really raunchy R-rated comedy called Miss March coming out in March. And then down the line, we have an action film that Rennie Harlan directed. We have a John Hughes-esque film that Chris Columbus directed. We have Diablo Cody's next movie that Megan Fox stars in. That's a horror film. So when you think about that, those diverse types of genres, you know, there is kind of like an atomic film because we are, you know, the younger 17 to 24 youth division. And so kind of stuff that falls within that mandate within, you know, what would be an atomic movie, you know, would be within Fox Atomic Comics as well. But, you know, we're starting with stuff that's organic to us, stuff that makes sense, and then, you know, we'll see what happens next. Okay?
Let me add one more thing. Stop talking, Ross! But I do want to say, you know, I think that the exciting thing about this is that it's groundbreaking. I don't think anybody's ever done it before. And to me, it's like, you know, I think we're trying to look at things that are on a certain level game changer. And I think that, you know, now I'm going to pitch my company, and I'm going to pitch your company, and I'm going to say, we're the first that did it, and I think afterwards there's going to be a lot of people that are going to follow. Because they're going to be excited about the potential.
It's fun.
Cool. And let me just add something at the end here. Just one last thing. There is... Chip Rozier, go ahead. There is no truth to the matter that you have to be from San Antonio or from Texas to work with Boom. Just because Eric and Ross went to the same high school, though at different times, and I'm from Texas, and we also, Boom works with Iburs, with Michael Murphy, who's also from Texas. It doesn't mean that you have to be from Texas to work with Boom.
So we know where GW is going to be working now, apparently.
Now we switch to two of my favorite guys that I enjoy talking to on a regular basis, Matt Fraction and Ed Brubaker, who had some fun announcements over the WonderCon weekend. Matt's big announcement, of course, the crossover between Dark Avengers and Uncanny X-Men that will be happening over the summer. Matt is pretty much running the ship on that arc. And Ed is buzzing with the excitement of Angel of Death. If you haven't checked out this online movie that will soon be direct to DVD, be sure to go to crackle.com and check it out. Zoe Bell is incredible. And really, for a budget that is much smaller than your average feature film, they did a lot of great work. The camera work is amazing. It's a great action feature. All the parts are up at crackle.com. Do check it out, because it is absolutely worth it, and don't wait for it to come on video. But great cast. Ted Raimi is in the film. Lucy Lawless is in the film. Todd Jones. Good stuff. But here is Matt and Ed, and this was at the end of the weekend on Sunday. We were all kind of wiped out, and what starts is just kind of plugging what they were doing on the panels and talking about some of their books becomes a conversation in general about digital comics and where comics might be going this year and forward.
backstage. We're backstage right now at the Esplanade here at WonderCon, and we're waiting for Jeffrey Bell's panel for Harper's Island to end. But while we're doing that, I'm able to talk for a moment with Ed Fraction and Matt Brubaker. How about that?
Wrong.
Exactly. Can you tell it, Sunday? That's why I figured I'd take it to the
I would name him Matt, so there would be a Matt Brubaker.
Okay, so
grew up to kill us both and take our place.
So switch the names around, and you know who I'm talking to. But they've been very tolerant of me all weekend, and it's good to see both of you guys, because I waste a lot of your time on the phone, so it's nice to see it. Waste time and face to face, so that's good.
It's hardly a waste.
And Matt, we just talked in New York, so I'll start with it briefly and say I really enjoyed what I've seen so far of Angel of Death. It looks really cool, and the panel looked like everything went well, and people seem to be very supportive of it. So.
Yeah, it's been a blast. That was actually the first time I saw the finished cut of any of it. I've seen rough cuts of, the first three or four until this morning. And this morning I got to watch the first eight episodes because they brought up DVDs for me. And tomorrow I'm flying to L.A. to see the feature film cut version, which is going to be a little bit different than the episode. So I'm really excited about that. And, yeah, it looks amazing. Those guys did a great job. The director, Paul Etheridge, I think he really pulled it off. And, every dime we had is on that screen. And it's really cool. The guy who plays our bad guy, Jake, just emailed me the other day. He just signed on to be, one of the main two stars in Chris Columbus's next movie. And he's, our bad guy. He's a kid, but he's insanely evil in our thing, which is just amazing. And he's going to be a huge star, as is Zoe Bell. After people see this, it's.
So by the time this airs, several episodes will be up at Crackle.com, and it's being released each day, a new episode, for the first 2 weeks in March.
Every Monday through Friday for 2 weeks, and then that'll be the complete thing. And then the feature version, I believe, will come out sometime in the summer, and DVD and through iTunes and any way you can get anything digital. So, yeah, I'm really excited about it. And we did lots of DVD extras.
All good.
Some of which I tried to get them to leave out because I'm like, I didn't say that. I didn't want to say that. But I said my most embarrassing thing ever. I was trying to explain the story. I was like, well, Angel of Death is sort of like an origin story. There's Batman Begins, and this is Eve Begins. And I'm like, but when you see your face on a screen saying that, you're like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever said. So I asked them to take that out, and they were like, that's the coolest line we've got. Damn it.
Maddie, a big announcement today, Dark Avengers and X-Men crossover this summer.
Yeah, man, my turn to go through the summer event meat grinder and see what happens. I'm excited. Fingers crossed. But yeah, it was a big day for me.
So it's going to be six issues, and you said there's an alpha issue, and then... take us through the...
There'll be an alpha issue, Uncanny 513, Dark Avengers 7, Uncanny 514, Dark Avengers 8, and an Omega issue. And that's it. And it's a pretty cataclysmic summer for the X-Men and the Dark Avengers alike.
And 512 sounds really cool, a little time travel episode tying into San Francisco history.
Yeah, clearly I have been watching Doctor Who because I wrote a time travel issue. But yeah, the X-Men since they've figured out how to go forward in time with regards to Cable and everything that's happening over there with X-Force, they thought, why don't we go back in time and study the origins of the species, which they do.
Excellent. We'll pause. That's getting good coverage in the LA Times for Incognito and for Angel of Death, which is very cool.
Well, listen, I'm going to be in the San Clemente Penny Saver.
Yeah, you're the weekly reader this week.
So suck it, Brew.
I'm looking for a used car, so I will be calling you.
Well, let me may invite you to read the Thrifty Nickel.
Oh, man. I'm a subscriber of the Thrifty Nickel. I work in comics.
I steal it off the internet.
You're the problem. You're part of the problem.
I BitTorrent CBR files of the Penny Saver and the Thrifty Nickel.
That actually would be really funny. It would cost more in bandwidth than it costs to buy the thing.
Well, that's what we used to say about comics. I mean, downloading and reading comics that way, or printing them off the internet.
I just don't enjoy reading digital comics personally. I'm 42 years old. I'm not a print baby.
No, but it's
people doing it.
Really, home video didn't kill the box office. It's not its intended format. But there are times when there are books that you just are dying for. I would love to be able to read it on my phone while it's in the mail coming to me. You know what I mean? I would love that stuff. It's a movie theater is still going to be the optimal experience to see it, especially if you've ever seen a movie in 3D IMAX. Your home is never going to be able to replicate that scale of film. And it's really terrific. Like you see Coraline, Selleck knew what he was doing. That guy was shooting for 3D. It's the first time somebody was clearly shooting for 3D in a way that wasn't just, I'm going to hold a pointy thing at the camera like they're fucking like, <"I'm not> But it's amazing. You're like, this is what's going to be, this is what,
you,
this is the answer to Blu-ray. Like, yeah. This is the answer to, I can now have film resolution in my house, but I can't experience this sort of immersive. And it's great. And it's, I think like the digital stuff is just going to be good enough. We're fine to settle. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Everyone's fine to settle. It'll be fine. It's a stopgap. Look, it puts more comics in the hands of more people more easily.
Yeah.
You live in a shitty town that doesn't carry Incognito. Would you rather somebody steal Incognito off the internet and then order the trade, or just simply never read it?
Yeah, I'd rather that they, you know, or steal it. I'd rather that they are able to legally get it on the internet for, you know, even a dollar or whatever. No, I'm fine with that as long as, you know, I don't think it will go print. Just like, well, somebody was saying, like, when they put Monty Python on YouTube, like, suddenly the Monty Python DVDs
increased 500%.
Yeah, it was like they were the number one DVDs on Amazon for like a couple months because there was a whole new generation that had just suddenly discovered.
Very much so, absolutely.
I've been so tempted to put all of Casanova on my website and just give it away.
Yeah. Wow, why not? Most of ours is
online. Really hard about it. A part of it is just not the time to get the brain space to do it. But
yeah.
Maybe if I know in volume, once I get a firm target date for volume 3, maybe I'll do it.
That's cool. What about in Motion Comics? What do you guys think of this stuff? And I know Marvel.
You mean Wiggle Comics?
Well, all right. I mean, I know Spider Woman is starting up and everything, and DC's up and running.
I got a whole thing on this.
Epileptic Comics?
I come from an animation background.
Absolutely.
It infuriates me to see, like, why don't you just make it animated? Now, what Marvel is doing, what Brian and Alex are doing with
right.
Spider Woman is they're making an animated short.
Okay.
For print.
It is the
motion comic first and the print comic second, but they're keeping in mind this has two different vessels.
I understand.
That's terrific. I have problems with shit wiggling and leaves blowing through frames. I know the work that goes into it, it wasn't the intent, it wasn't the authorial intent, and as an animator, I'm just like, fuck, we could do this quicker and better if we just did it all in Flash to begin with, or if we just did this in After Effects. We could get the best of both worlds, so when they start, like, what's going on with Spider-Woman as a motion comic first that has a print iteration that the creative team is designing with that in mind, it's part of the reason it's taking so long.
Sure.
No one's done what these guys are doing before. In this order, I should say.
I understand.
So I don't really, I mean, I think it's cute. I think it's great that people are able to get comics on iTunes and stuff, and yay that it wiggles. I want to hear Rorschach's voice.
Yeah.
It's in my head. It exists.
Okay.
So I got stuff like that. Like, I want to be able to read still. I don't want to hear voices. I don't want sound effects. If the visuals are put together by taking it as a piece of film first, and then figuring out, well, now how do you translate that to comics in ways that how do you make the comic do stuff that film can't do and have the film do stuff that comic can't do so there's a value, aesthetic value, artistic value in each? Then we're talking.
Okay. The only ones I've paid for are the Peanuts ones, which just look like short Peanuts cartoons, and they're great because they don't have words to learn.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's the same company that did the Watchmen one, I think, but it's just, you know, they just are literally adapting like a week's run of Peanuts into like a 3-minute cartoon, and the voices are done in the same way that they were in the cartoons back in the day, and it just looks like a Peanuts cartoon, and you just download it on iTunes, you know, and it's like, those are the ones I've bought because I love Peanuts.
Sure.
You know? And you know, I looked at all the other ones, and you know, DC's doing one of my Batman Black and White stories as a motion comic for their next wave of the Batman ones.
Okay.
And so I'm curious to see what they do with it, but I've looked at the story and I'm like, I don't know how they're going to do it. Like,
Have you seen the 10 that they started with Batman?
Yeah, and they picked some ones that were, you know, I mean, you pick a Bruce Timm one, that's pretty easy to figure out how to animate. You know, but Ryan Sook, where people are like overlapping into different panels, I'm like, I don't have any idea how they're going to animate this
I would love to see Zatanna 4 as a motion comic.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
Neil Adams' Dead Man series.
It's tricky with stuff that pre-exists, because it exists in your head. You
absolutely.
I mean, you're encountering something new and there's spoken word, and there's a voice actor, that's a different issue. But
okay.
When it's something that I just wanted to amend, I was thinking, like, well, wait a minute, I wouldn't mind something new. If you've always encountered it as, oh, there's a voice, and then you read it, you know, this kind of, I know what Rorschach sounds like.
I know what Night Owl sounds like. I've heard him. I've been hearing him for 20 years or whatever.
The Watchmen one was really funny because on a road trip, he talks to me when I murder hobos. when Mel and I were on a road trip once, we listened to an entire Harry Potter book on tape that we'd already read. And it was being read by, a guy.
Okay.
And whenever he did Hermione, I just wanted to scream.
Exactly.
Oh, Harry!
Yeah, I understand.
Seriously. Come on. Just read it as if it's a normal voice. Like, whenever he did the girl voices, I was just like, And, but it's a book on tape, so it's always going to be weird. But they can't always get Helen Mirren.
I just imagine Helen Mirren doing the voice of Aunt May, and it was awesome.
That'd be cool.
There's a, on the
first fuckable Aunt May ever.
Here, here. Yeah, she looked good in that bathing suit last summer. I got to be honest.
For an old lady,
I cannot even continue.
Well, you see, we're older, so we
tonight.
Can...
Tonight on John Center's says Cougar Hunt.
You know, I can't accept.
I got shit for saying Blair Butler was cute, so yeah, I know. I'm like, I know, I'm a perv now on the internet.
No, she's fantastic. Blair's not just cute, she's Kansas City cute. She's Midwestern American values cute.
There you
she's
go.
A Kansas City girl done well.
God, atta boy.
What was I saying?
Yeah, I don't know, the Cougar Hunt, obviously, sidetracked. Sorry,
really
buddy.
Cougar fucking derailed me.
Are you listening, Fox? That's your next reality show.
Right. On MILF Island.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you, Jack.
The
Danzig show sounds like a great idea.
Hang on your thought, because, yes, that was a good idea they had at the panel.
My dad, Danzig.
Adopted by Danzig.
It's like, sorry, Chester, you're just not anywhere near as brutal as you needed to be out there on the team-building exercise.
You're out of the house.
It's time to send you back to your mother!
So what were you going to say?
DC or somebody, they put together this Infinite Crisis, audio book, but it was done like a radio book.
Oh, no, I've heard it, yeah.
It was the most... It's hard work, and I know a lot of good people spent a lot of hours working on it. It is the funniest fucking thing I have ever heard in my entire life.
Where is this available?
Oh, www.stealitfromtheinternet.com.
Oh, yeah. Oh no, I've heard Infinite Crisis. I know what you're talking about.
The Warner
audiobook department.
The Warner,
they turned
the novelization of Infinite Crisis into a sound film. Some ridiculous thing like that.
You know, though, honestly, I heard blind people saying that they really appreciate it, because there's a level of description where it's like the heroine comes out, she is in a yellow spandex thing.
I used to do that as a kid.
I would make my own radio plays of Spider-Man comics.
But this is so insane.
It's literally hours long. It's like 6 or 8 hours
huge.
Long.
No, first off, it goes on forever, but like, It's such a visual story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's heavy exposition to describe the action.
Exactly.
Incredibly heavy.
Perez having 800 characters.
Describe a Phil Jimenez panel with 19 characters.
Exactly.
The death of the freedom fighters in the beginning. Yeah. Like, let's describe what everybody's wearing.
Sound effects, and there's lightning, and there's music, and there's different voice actors. It is so berserk. You have the feeling that they had to, as they were finishing it, somebody must have gone
was that too much?
Did we really just make a 9.5 hour long adaptation?
It took me a week to get through it.
Much like Jurassic Park, just because they can do it doesn't mean they should do it. Well, here it's just berserk.
Well, and I think much
I
like that
to everyone involved.
No, but it's an evolving idea. I mean, and I'd say that about the motion comics and digital comics as well. We haven't seen everything's in transition.
You know what this is? This is the period of, this is the montage where we get to see the airplane with 17 wings.
Yes. That's Infinite Crisis.
All the rockets crashing.
That's good.
This is, we're all trying to figure out how to get to the moon is the next step.
That's very good.
However, comics are going to live digitally. We're trying to figure that out.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate your guys' thoughts on this. I mean, honestly.
I'm not sure that wiggling, and I know that there's stuff where people are starting to map the flat images onto body forms and turn them into 3D spaces, but it's it's disingenuous to do that, to not be the guy that drew that. It would be it's not the original intent of the creative team.
Sure.
So I don't know. I'm not into it.
When I was watching the Watchmen one, as much as I knew Dave Gibbons, like consulted with him on it and everything, I just every time I see something like that, I just feel Alan Moore dying a little bit, you know?
Yeah, Brian was saying the same thing, just in general about the marketization of Watchmen and what's going on. Yeah,
I've never seen a boat so thoroughly missed as the kind of clue boat that sailed away from Watchmen Harbor as the film. Like, this is ridiculous. Do you remember Dan Close did a short story called Velvet Glove? And it was about Hollywood optioning, like a Velvet Glove, Cast in Iron, putting a Keanu Reeves type in it, making it a science fiction action summer tentpole movie. And there's he's watching it get further and further away. Like, instead of a dog with no head, what if it was his sister? And he's like, but he doesn't have a sister. And at the end, he's laying in bed crying, and his agent calls and says, you know, hey, it's your agent. Good news. Marvel Comics is going to publish the adaptation of Velvet Glove. I think I can pull some strings and get you a gig inking. It's like that.
Outstanding.
It's like that. Like,
that's outstanding.
It's amazing. Well, it's just, I can't.
That's why he lives like in Manchester or wherever he lives.
Notable. Rorschach Night Owl fight game, Matt was just like, oh my god.
Really,
but then also seeing guys walk around dressed as the comedian, you're like, you do know he's the rapist baby murderer, right?
There's a line of Watchmen Halloween costumes. Now you too can dress up your child like the comedian, and he can go out and rape and kill babies too, just like your favorite. And it says, dress like your favorite vigilante.
Wow.
Fuck you!
Do the Rorschach masks actually move?
Between,
that would be cool, actually. I'd like that.
Between this grotesque exploitation of Watchmen. I
don't think the movie is good. I haven't seen it yet.
Of course.
Honestly, the first 20 minutes do look good.
No one wins from a bad movie. Nobody wins.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not gleeful about this.
No.
I'm shocked that how this is so not what the book was about. It would be like, it would make, well.
Don't forget the Raymond Chandler argument, too, though. You know, obviously, the book is going to be fine. The book will be fine.
But couldn't there have been.
They've sold more copies of the book in the last 3 months than they have the entire time it's been in print.
Alan Moore.
Jesus, and that's saying something given the time that it's been in print, as you were saying in your panel, how.
It's over a million copies in the last 3 months.
Wow.
Alan Moore came back to comics to do the ABC line because he thought all of the wrong lessons had been taken from Watchmen. That instead of looking at characters like Rorschach and feeling a sense of moral revulsion and repugnance, people thought, oh, cool, we can cleave dog heads now. And it's all stubble. You know, Grant Morrison has a lot of riffs about the stubble-faced vigilantes. And Watchmen was a warning about that. And it just feels like this is all that's been exploited. This fetishization of violence, the fetish costume, I think it misses the point of what the book was. So, my God, you know, between that amazing Dave Stevens book, Brush with Greatness, Brush with Passion, I can't remember, it was a Dave Stevens biography, and Stevens, like, had this creative crisis, and he worked commissions at the end of his life, but while he was sick, while the man was dying, he was back at art school teaching himself how to paint. He didn't think he was any good, and he didn't own a piece of The Rocketeer in any profound way. I mean, it became this whole, like, talk to Brian about it.
Oh, no, I know, but actually Brian talked about it on the Bendis tapes. Yeah, I didn't want to keep bringing Brian's name up, but you're right.
Craig Yeo's book, Secret Identity, which when, after Donenfeld paid Schuster $20 to never set foot in the D.C. offices again, the only place that Schuster could find work was drawing Tijuana Bible kind of fetish porn featuring the Superman cast.
And yeah, clearly it's Lois. Clearly it's Superman.
Absolutely. It is the Jimmy Olsen putting cigarette butts out on Lois's ass cheek. And Laura Lang, Laura Lane, what was her sister?
Lucy Lane,
Lois Lane, Jimmy, Lex, Clark, you know.
I saw Lex actually whipping women and everything.
He could still draw, so it looks terrific. They're not identified as Superman, but it's amazing.
But it's clearly the faces,
And the thing was, there was a porno publisher in New York. It was sold on 42nd Street, right around the corner from where DC was, sold on the Deuce. And the thing was, there's a gang of there's a race-hating spree-kill gang out of Brooklyn. So there's actually a really famous photograph of the cops busting them. They pulled one of the bodies out. They beat and drowned a black man. They pulled the body out of the bay. There's a really famous photograph of the cops making the kids look at the body, and one kid is losing it. But these kids had these porno mags, And again, there's no penetration. I don't even remember. I don't even think there are nipples. You know what I mean? There might be a nipple, but it's not. It's not like. It's all about abuse and
yeah, fetish. Yeah, it's S&M. Yeah, absolutely.
But these kids hadn't, and the cops shut down the publisher. So
oh, I didn't know that part of the story.
Yeah, that's
oh, that's interesting.
Only like 8 or 9 of them, but Craig Yeo found a guy who had them. And I was like, oh my God, this is Schuster. This is, and it was.
Wow. Yeah.
And but between those three things, between Watchmen, the Dave Stevens book, and Secret Identity, never before has the importance of owning something in this world been more clear to me.
Wow. Well, that's
no
good
idea.
For both
Dave
of you.
Dave Stevens didn't own the Rocketeer outright.
I don't have the details quite right. Yeah. He ended up not
doing so well on the movie.
Yeah, he ended up ultimately. Yeah, I
we'll consult the book.
Yeah, yeah, please.
Yeah, well, yeah. Let's read the book to get it accurate. But yeah, it's cool.
Brush with greatness, brush with destiny, brush with something.
I'm sure if you put Dave Stevens' biography, we'll be able to find it. But yeah, I've been curious since Brian was talking about it too. So this is good, guys. I mean, yeah, I was ready to go, Captain America. You know, to our usual shit. But I'm happy we're having our usual conversation here, man.
Like, you know, it's great. I love my job. I have a great time doing it. But it's one of those things that's like, right, things like Casanova, Incognito, really important.
Yeah.
Just to have something that's yours in this world.
And the control.
I had that moment last year when I realized, like, people were really coming after Sean for jobs, and I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to keep Sean on, you know, Criminal and Incognito and stuff. And I just thought, I don't think I want to work in comics if I can't keep doing these books with Sean, even if I don't make a dime on them. I don't think I want to keep doing it. You know, this is what I want to do.
I mean,
you know, if I can't, I mean, I love writing Captain America. I love writing Daredevil.
Sure.
I love the stuff I get to do. But, you know, when I get to do Incognito and Criminal, it's like, I don't have to answer to anybody. No one sees it besides me and Sean and Val until it's at the printer, you know?
Well, and I think that's, and again, with Casanova as well, that's what makes these things unique. And then it's your guy's voice, and it's, as you say, no filters, and you know the audience appreciates that. God, Jeff, we were, you know, as we started this thing, you know, we were waiting for Ed and Matt to meet Jeffrey Bell, and it was really fun to see that Jeff is truly a fan of both of these guys, and it's very cool. So, and he gets it, and you know, it figures given the stuff that he writes and everything. But he said introducing you to his wife, and it was Incognito, and it was Casanova, and it was Criminal, and it was Sleeper, and it was the cool stuff. So that's really great.
It was really impressive.
Awesome.
It was very flattering.
Yeah. No, definitely, guys.
Harper's Island.
Yeah, Harper's Island was really cool, and hopefully I'll track Jeff Bell down to talk about that, because it does look really interesting, and it's nice to see that TV in America is willing to experiment with the 13-episode arc.
Guys, am I crazy, or did I just rant for like half an hour?
19 minutes, but it's good.
Oh,
19. I got a running time on here.
6:22.
No, this is like what usually happens when I have one or both of them on and everything, but this is excellent. Let's just leave it at this. This is just a good kind of con musings moment.
Whip out our cocks and end it.
All right. Aren't you glad there isn't video right now? As always, thank you. Thanks for hanging. It's really good to see you guys.
Yeah, good to see you, man.
Yeah, truly. And we will like do real ones and long individual ones and bother each of your wives. So
they love that.
Very cool.
Anything to get me out of the kitchen.
So there you go. A quick conversation with Ed Brubaker and Matt Fraction, and it was a lot of fun hanging with them over the weekend. Good to see Rick Remender. Mark Andrew Smith gave me his brand new book, The New Brighton Archaeological Society, which is a cool bunch of short stories following a group of children whose parents are the greatest archaeologists in the world. And when their parents are lost on an exhibition, their mission is to find the parents' work, collect the books of magic, and defeat their parents' nemesis. It's a very neat little collection, and I suggest you pick it up. It is available through Image. Now, unfortunately, I don't have my pack of books that I was given at WonderCon. I will promise on the next episode of Word Balloon to continue my acknowledgments and thank yous for the various people that I met and spoke to at WonderCon, including some more Boom guests. We're going to have a fun conversation with Keith DeCandidio, who is co-writing the Farscape comic with Rockne O'Bannon, and I think has been doing an excellent job. If you're a Farscape fan, it's a great book, and I suggest if you haven't picked it up to go to your store and make sure you get it. The first arc is 4 issues, and it's just wrapping up an amazing story and picks up right where the Peacekeeper Wars left off. So neat stuff, and more interviews coming up. We're going to give you an avalanche of stuff. I know that March was kind of a light month, but I promise that neat, fun stuff is on the way, just days away from your pals here at Word Balloon. John Sutcher saying thanks for listening, and make sure you tune in next time. Check us out at iTunes, at wordballoon.com. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is John Word Balloon. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, there's our forum at wordballoon.com, also hosted at jinxworld.com. Or you can email me with your questions and comments, john at wordballoon.com. Thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.